born in Australia. How did your family get there?
My father came to Australia in 1948 aboard the SS Strathnaver. The SS Strathnaver was one of the three transports of Polish ex-servicemen who left England to come to settle to Australia. There was in total 1,500 of them. They were accepted in Australia under a specific migrant program for British people from British Army. They came and they had to work for 2 years in specific jobs that were designated by the Commonwealth Employment Service. A lot of them ended up in Tasmania to work on the hydroelectric scheme. Others worked in the sugar canes in Queensland, while others worked in the forestry. He landed in Sydney and then ended up in Western Victoria. There was a lot of single men in that transport. Some of them remained single. A lot of them married Australian women or had English women as wives. My father, on the other hand, after the Melbourne Olympics of 1956, became very homesick and went back to Poland. He mentioned to a former primary school friend in his village that he was looking for a wife. They then sent a telegram to my mother, who was on the other side of Poland, that she had to come over, and they matched my father with my mother. So my mother migrated then to Australia in 1958. She was laughingly called an imported wife. For my mother, it was a major problem because she was the last remaining child of her parents and she was leaving them in Poland. My grandfather was heavily invalided. It was a major change for her to go to the other side of the globe. Now, we have to remember that in the 1950s, the notion of going to Australia from Poland or from Europe was extremely a shock to the system. It was, you know, you went once. Rarely did you expect to go back. You know, maybe once in your lifetime you would go back and that was it. Now people sometimes go to Poland, stay there 6 months, come back to Australia and stay here 6 months. You have other ways of communicating. At that time, Australia was a godforsaken place, so far away. Branica Suchowolska, where my father came from, didn't have it. It was, I think, right up to 26 years ago, there were only two landline telephones. Communication had to be through correspondence only, especially in the 40s and the early 50s, during the worst Stalinist times. A correspondence from abroad was definitely carefully monitored. The notion of Australia for people from my father's village was extremely exotic.
What's the size of the Polish community living in Australia?
2011 statistics said that it was about roughly 170,000. So it is a very small number compared to the Canadian Polonia. The large concentrations are in the two biggest cities, Melbourne and Sydney. And then you have certain groupings, well-organized groupings in places like Hobart, which is a very small town. But that's where most of the ex-servicemen who came on in 1947 and 1948 settled and established Polish communities there. There is a community in Brisbane, a small community in Perth, and a small community in Adelaide, but they're very well organized as well. At the moment, the trips to Poland are more frequent, and second and third generation are more likely to go and visit Poland than they would have, say, 20 or 30 years ago.
You have kept the Polish roots. You know the language. You are interested in Polish history. You've done a lot for keeping this whole Polishness in Australia alive. Is that typical?
There is a group of people that have been brought up within the Polonia structures and the typical organizations, Polish Scouts, Polish dance groups, Polish Saturday schools. Some go through it and just come out of the whole process with a very basic knowledge of Polish, kitchen Polish. I'm one of the fortunate ones that I am bilingual and I'm bicultural. I've been very heavily involved both at a local and at a national level. There are some places like Hobart where have not had an inflow of migrants from the 1980s. The organisations are forced to basically hand over the reins to the second and third generation. And they have got a very strong network and also a strong sense of identity, simply because they are that isolated from the what they call the mainland. I am not typical, but there are more people like myself.
Does the Australian government care about minorities in a sense that they would encourage preserving
yes.
the identities, the culture, fund it?
Definitely, yes. The Australian multicultural philosophy is very similar to the Canadian philosophy. Our multicultural policies came into play in the 1970s, and also it was established with a Polish sociologist, Jerzy Zubrzycki, who was very instrumental in putting the philosophy and the policies together. Polish schools get government funding, Saturday schools. There is Polish as a second language at a secondary level that is run within the state education system. Organizations, ethnic organizations, get funding for their activities, for projects, for festivals. The whole idea is that it's there to maintain the culture, adds and contributes to the wonderful cultural mosaic that is in Australia. So it's very similar to the Canadian concept. Of course, there is still sometimes an undercurrent of racism or an undercurrent of xenophobia that sometimes crops up in the most unfortunate situations. But it is not as obvious, say, with the Poles, as we have recently witnessed in the UK after Brexit. But it is more visible with Muslims, and it is more obvious with people of different colouring. We have a very large Indian community here in Australia as well, and they sometimes become targets for racist abuse. But most of the state governments, as well as the federal government, openly comes out to condemn any such actions. So it is not culturally appropriate. It is something which is very firmly said that it is wrong, it is not acceptable, and the people can keep their identity. So, for instance, we have a very strong network within the Polish community, at least in Victoria we do, of Polish senior citizens clubs, which is a reflection of the demographic within the Polish community. And they get funding at local government level for their activities, at the state level for administrative and other type of needs, and as well as conferences on aging. So the large non-profit organizations, especially that deal with aged care, see this, try and target these communities and also get funding for providing culturally appropriate care mm-hmm. for the aged.
Is it still the case that people of Polish origin who live in Australia would just go to Poland once, maybe twice in their lives because of the distance?
No, the trips nowadays are more frequent. For those that came in the 80s and their children, because the links are still relatively fresh, the trips are more frequent. And as I said, there is a steady flow of sometimes second and third generation who are bilingual to go back and actually work there. I know of at least 5 or 6 cases that are similar. And it reminds me a bit of what happens with the second and third generation in the UK, where they have a foot in each country. With the people that came in the 80s, they will sometimes visit once every 2 years, once every 3 years. The tyranny of distance has been broken because, you know, you can communicate through Skype or the internet. Correspondence doesn't go for months on end because a letter that was sent from Poland to Australia would take at least a month in the olden days. Now, you know, even older people sometimes have access to the internet and can write an email. For the older generation that came in the 50s and prior to that, maybe once or twice, they may have gone in the 70s, they may have gone in the 80s. But a lot of these people are already in their 80s and 90s, and so the trips aren't that frequent simply because of their age. They're not able to do that. The expense to travel to Europe is, for us, quite high. It's not worth going for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. If you go, you will go for 2 months or 3 months. It was only in the late 50s, early 60s that suddenly people were, started flying. Prior to that, you went by ship. And it took a month, if not longer, to travel. Now, okay, from Australia, it's 26 hours from, if you're going through London to Poland. It is a tiring process and an expensive process. So we're talking about over $2,000 just to travel.
What do you love about that country?
The fact that it's very open. You can be who you want to be. You don't have to be somebody that society has forced you to be. The one thing that I found in Poland sometimes stifling, and in the UK, is that society places a label upon you. You're a woman, so you have to be like this. You are of a certain sexuality, then you're this. In Australia, you can be who you want to be. Nobody's going to force you to be anything other what you want, and that is the beauty of a multicultural society.